TSN 1200 presents Tee It Up with golf pro and columnist Kevin Hayne. Talk all things golf with a former Canadian PGA Teacher of the Year and a National Post Canada's Top 10 Golf Teacher. Now, get out your driver and tee it up with Kevin Hayne.
Well, good morning, golfers. Tee it up here on TSN 1200 and lovely, crisp, clean, and cold Saturday morning. Jake and I are going to entertain you. Grab a coffee, everyone. Just, you know, make a nice, strong coffee. That sounds good. Man, that sounds good. And, like, have a seat and just, we're going to entertain you for an hour here if you're a golf fan or even if you're not a golf fan and you had to run out somewhere to pick something up, we'll keep you company and fill you in a little bit on the world of golf and we'll teach you how to play golf a little bit like we always do. There's so much to talk about all the time. I love this game now because it seems to never stop. And there's always intriguing stories, and we're going to get at a bunch of them today. So we've got, what do we have today, Jake? Jake, welcome to the show, young man.
Hi, thanks for having me again. This is, I'm excited to be here. It's a little cold this
morning. Yeah, we were in Florida last week doing the show, and now we're stuck here in minus a gajillion. Anyway, we've had a fun time. Yesterday we were at the Ben Franklin Park Superdome all day, having a Ping G430 Fit Day. It was our first fit day of the year. A lot of fun. We had we were full all day. Had people everywhere looking at G430 stuff. We've got a little bit of LIV news. Of course, Rory won in Dubai last year. We got another little issue with Patrick Reed. We've got Phil Mickelson this week really busy on Twitter. We've got Bryson DeChambeau acting like Bryson DeChambeau again. We got Max Homa winning at Torrey Pines last week. I got a few stats about Brooke Henderson. We got to wrap up the golf show. We're going to teach a little bit today, a little bit about our fitting day yesterday. And I want to talk a little bit, boy, oh boy, when you stand on a range tee and you just watch people practicing or even the folks who were nice enough to come out for the fitting day, watching their mannerisms and their trigger moves and how they start their swings and everything, there's a lot to talk about. So let's get going. What do you want to talk about first there, kid? What do you got on your mind?
Oh,
did you see the...
We also talked about the golf pool, by the way. That's another thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, last week to do it. So, everyone, the Kevin Hayne season-long Money Race pool ends Thursday morning at 8 a.m. You go to kevinhayne.com. You sign up your team. I think we got a bunch of people. We always do. It's a lot of fun. You make up a funny name or, hopefully a clever name. And Jackson, I saw he emailed out to our email list yesterday. All kinds of names from last year that we kind of liked. Mom's made the list. Homa on the Range was your mother last year. So we always like to put some tricky little names together. A lot of fun. You pick your players. You got two from Tier 1, two from Tier 2, two from Tier 3, two from 4, two from 5, and then eight from Tier 6. So it's going to be interesting this year, though. I think you have to nail the first couple of groups, Jake, because... with the purses now at 15, 20, 25 million for different events, and all the top guys are going to play in those big events, if you don't have the winners of the $25 million purse at the Players Championship, for example, you're going to be knocked down the list. So you got to be very careful. Unlike other years where I always thought all the guys in the first group would be pretty good and then you had to nail those wild cards, this year I'm almost thinking you need a little bit more luck, as it were, to pick those two guys in that top 10 group. So
I will say, though, you know, thing Kevin that Hayne. Having com. So many elevated players does at least equalize a lot of those events. One of the problems before is if, you know, you had a guy in the top group win one or two majors in a Players Championship, I mean, it really disproportionately rewarded people who had that one player. Now with so many of the designated events having that much money, you do need to get the nail the top couple of groups, you know, where those players have a chance to win those events or multiple of those events. But there are 12 events that have that much budget before the majors even occur. So in a weird way, it almost equalizes and spreads out the money pool too. So I think it's going to be a really interesting year for the pool. And you're right, that kind of mid-range zone and the top guys, I think, are really where it's going to be at.
Yeah, I would highly recommend spending this week, all you real avid players who go out after stats and everything, just have a look at any players that are on the bubble. Sometimes you see startling statistics, like one player is a much better putter than another. One player plays in 21 events, one plays in 28 events. I mean, you always want to lean towards the guys who are going to play in more events. I think you want to lead towards the great short game stats, always, that scoring. You can look at last year's top 10s. Some guys only get like one top 10 a year, but they're always 25th or 8th. Other guys will have five top 10s and then miss a bunch of cuts. You want those five top 10 guys because the PGA Tour money list is very top heavy any week and in total. You got to win and you got to play well to make big bucks on the PGA Tour. So you're looking for guys with a lot of top 10s. That's another thing you're going to look at. Guys with a lot of starts, that's something you want to look at. And I'd be interested to see if we just took the top two names on each tier, other than the final tier, and just pick them, how you would do, because you're always trying to get, you know, your team, your players into the next higher tier the following year. So Tony Finau, for example, who I think I am going to pick because he's been a rock star for the last 6 months. But Tony is number 11 on our list. So can you see him in that first tier next year finishing top 10? And I can definitely see him do that. On the other hand, you know, Billy Horschel. Can Billy Horschel get in that top 10, or is he going to be a second tier, third tier guy his whole career? So you want to look at the guys who have potential to jump forward. Those are just some general tips for people so they have stronger teams.
Your
grandmother, okay, is saying, I have no idea why, but
it's totally unfounded. I know exactly what you're about to say.
Yeah. Well, I don't even want to say who, because there's a couple of players who we really like in that last group. But Ricky Fowler, let's throw one out there, because we're going to talk about his new Netflix special, too. Ricky Fowler's in that last group. His swing's looking great with Butch. You should pick him. But she's got this weird thing in her mind that he's going to live, which is ridiculous, because Ricky Fowler is like in with Tiger Woods in the car. You know, remember when they went to have that emergency meeting and Tiger Woods kind of addressed the PGA Tour? Who was in the passenger seat with him? Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler's got the Netflix special kind of partnering with the PGA Tour. He is not going to live, Nana Jones. Oh, go ahead.
I agree, but I would like to clarify for everybody, because we're going to talk Full Swing, which is the Netflix thing, a little bit here.
Yeah, it comes out February 15th.
Yeah, it is not partnered with the PGA Tour. I just want to throw that out there. It is not a PGA Tour partner.
He is not going to live.
I agree with you completely. I just think, you know,
Nana Jones. Please, in that last group, pick Ricky Fowler.
Well, the other thing, yeah, everyone pick Ricky Fowler. We'll all be equal. The other general tip we would give everybody: try to look at data trends. It is very, you know.
Yeah, what's that website you go to? Data Trends? Is that it?
It's called Data Golf.
Data Golf.
It is very tempting to look at a player that you know has been good in the past and seems to be of value in a lower group. Like a Ricky Fowler. Ricky Fowler last year, for example, was a bad pick, even in that zone, because he was trending downwards going into the year. He actually ended up finishing lower for the first half of the year than he had finished in the year before. Now his data trend is going up. If we use the same player as an example, he's playing better. He's finishing higher in events. His strokes gained data is getting closer to being above the PGA Tour average again. All of a sudden, he looks like a totally different pick than he did 1 year ago. So try to see how your guy is trending over the last, 18, 12, 6, 3 months. If those keep getting better, that's when you know a player's got potential to move up a category.
Okay, so Max Homa, who won again last week at Torrey Pines, you were giving me some numbers on him. So he's in the second tier.
Yeah.
I can certainly see him being in the first tier. I mentioned Tony Finau. But I can see Cameron Young being in the first tier, too. I can see Sung Jae-in being in the first tier. I can see Hideki being in the first tier. I can see a lot of guys in that second tier the first tier. But what about Max? Give me some numbers on Max, because you were rhyming off the stats for him. He's won more than anybody but Rory, or has he even won more than Rory in the last...
He and Rory have the most PGA Tour wins since the start of 2021.
How many does he have?
Well, he has 6 total. In Max's last 45 starts, he has 5 wins, which is an above 10% win rate. I mean,
that's Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods is that for his, well, he's higher than that for his career. But, yeah, that's a Tiger Woods type.
Yeah, case. And when you start looking at a lot of the top players, you know, Rahm is currently at about 11% on his win percentage. Rory is just under 10. JT's at 9. Like, a lot of the top players in the game, that's kind of the clip they seem to be able to maintain their win rates at. Obviously, smaller sample size in Max's case, and not all of the tournaments were as big events. It is harder to win as many events as you start playing in exclusively the bigger tournaments. But when you start looking at the courses he has won on, Riviera, now Torrey Pines, Wells Fargo, those are big boy golf courses with difficult conditions.
He's a great ball striker, wonderful golf swing, great balance.
And so he's the kind of guy where you look at him and go, okay, well, clearly he knows how to win. You know, I think a really interesting stat in his case is he's only been in the top five going into the last day in nine tournaments. He's now won six of those nine times.
He's a closer. I love that. That's like I said about the top tens. That's a really important stat for this money race pool.
So, you know, obviously, he's never had a second on the PGA Tour. So statistically, that is going to happen at some point. He's going to, you know, be close to closing. It's not just going to work out for him. That data will normalize. But when you look at a guy like him, he clearly knows how to get it done. He plays good on the biggest tournaments. He's the kind of guy where you look at it and go, do you think he's going to be a top 10 player in the world? It's an interesting question. I'm not sure, you know, the answer to that. I personally believe he does have the potential to be top 10 in the world because he's been getting better, not worse. But
Homa on the range.
Homa on the range.
Way to go, Mom. So let's talk. I said that Rory won last week in Dubai. We talked about Homa. Rory won by birding the last two holes, and he beat the biggest villain in golf, the cheater, Patrick Reed, former, you know, Captain America for the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Now he's gone to live, gone to the dark side. It's like Darth Vader is running that tour. He had another rules thing this week, and I think video evidence proved that he was maybe dishonest or misinterpreted a situation at best. I've seen most of the media say, we can't give this guy the benefit of the doubt anymore, but he said his ball hit a certain pine tree or palm tree, stayed up in the palm tree. Video evidence showed that he actually hit a different tree.
Yeah, I mean, basically, he hit a tree. The ball likely did stay up in one of the trees. Couldn't identify which one. When he suggested one of the trees to the rules officials, they look up at the tree, gets a set of binoculars, and goes, there's no doubt that's my golf ball. So unless the very, very limited potential happened that a golf ball in a different tree with the exact same markings happened to be up there.
So he lied. Yeah. Basically, you got to infer that, right? So when you look at that situation, it was actually a better placement, too. It was the further tree down the fairway, I think.
True.
So his ball was in a different tree.
But even it's not even about which tree it was in. It's about the fact that he knows if he says for sure that's his golf ball, he doesn't have to go back to the tee and hit again. He gets to take an unplayable life in that position.
Yeah, and by the way, we should say, for non-golfers listening or golfers don't, we not only like would say I'm hitting a Titleist too, but we'll put like a green circle around the two or two red dots under the two or something to identify it as our Titleist too. So the odds of there being or whatever a Titleist too up in that tree and it happened to have his markings on it that you could see as you looked up at this thing stuck in a tree is pretty limited. So there we go again with Patrick Reed. But that's golf. The golf gods took care of him. He did not win. Rory birdied the last two holes to beat him. He did get some World Cup, world ranking points, some pretty high ones, though, for that event, being a DP World Tour major event. And that will help him maybe qualify for some of the majors. But there you go with some Patrick Reed. There was a lot of live crap this week. What'd you think of Phil Mickelson? We've got about 2 minutes to talk about Phil Mickelson tweeting that if there was a Ryder Cup between the LIV players and the PGA Tour players, that the LIV players would win easily. And that,
it's absurd.
What else did he say crazy? First of all, doesn't he look terrible? He's lost a bunch of weight. He looks 80. Like, they showed a picture of him at a media conference. He had, like, a dazed look in his eyes, and he looked hollow-cheeked. He did not look good. But I don't know if he's going bonkers or what. He said, you know, I've won 42 times on the PGA Tour. I haven't been able to win on LIV yet. It's much harder to win on the LIV Tour than on the PGA Tour.
I don't even think he believes what he's saying. I don't think Phil Mickelson believes that. I think he's smarter than that. I do, however, think that, you know, Phil understands the situation he's in. He's become much more of a villain than he ever intended to be. Frankly, LIV is not exactly moving in an upward trend at the moment. I'm far from saying LIV is dead, but we haven't really talked about the show. I think the CW deal they got is actually detrimental to their future. I don't think it's a positive. I think it's an ego-driven thing that they wanted a TV deal.
Jimmy and I actually talked about it. Jim Kroll and I talked about that. I think you were at the beach or something. You didn't show up for the show, so Jim and I did talk about the CW deal, actually.
I was in auto teaching while you were in Orlando.
A lot of people in England and in Australia will be watching the CW network.
Well, and it's also, you know, for the first 2 days of the competition, you got to download the CW app. How many people are going to do that? I mean, you know, I think it's not necessarily the best move, but they've moved to the CW.
Well, they didn't have a lot of moves. It's the only deal they got.
Well, so. But they should have stayed on YouTube. Is the answer then? If you don't have a good deal, keep what you're doing. I mean, YouTube has 2.6 billion monthly users. That would have been a fine place to keep watching Live Golf. But the, you know, there's not even very many rumors of players going over. They don't seem to be hyping themselves up that much. A lot of their new events are at tournaments that the PGA Tour has given up on in golf.
They're going
courses.
To Orange County National in March down to Orlando, so that'll be interesting. Crooked Cat and Panther Lakes there, good course.
Yeah. Look, some of the courses are good. It's just, you know, I don't think they have all this forward momentum. And so Phil is trying to drive the ship and get people talking about Live as the season is approaching. I don't think he believes it's hard to win on Live.
Of course he doesn't.
And the Ryder Cup thing is the same thing. You know, I can't fathom that Phil Mickelson actually thinks that the Live players would win.
First of all, that the PGA Tour wants anything to do with them, because why would the PGA Tour engage? So it's kind of silly. It's on, I think Golf Digest came up with some proposed teams as well. You know what? Let's go to break. We'll come back. We'll name those teams.
Sure.
So there's actually about 7 or 8 pretty good players on LIV. So the matches.
Of course there is.
The matches could be a little bit intriguing. It's never going to happen, though. And then we got to get to our fitting day, a little bit of teaching as well, Jake, and maybe a little idea, a little kind of club fitting idea. So we'll do all that in our second segment here, everyone. Stay with us. Kevin's here. Jake's with me. This Tee It Up on TSN 1200.
Now back to Tee It Up on TSN 1200.
Welcome back, golfers. Tee It Up here on TSN 1200. Jake, quick contest I want to announce, or you're going to announce, for our good friends at the BF Ben Franklin Park Superdome, where we teach in the wintertime. They're doing kind of a social media thing. What's going on?
Yeah, basically, it's a social media contest where you can enter to win 5 half hours at the Dome, which is a great practice prize for the winter. Pretty simple to enter. Go to any of their social media platforms, whether it's BFP Superdome on Instagram or Superdome's Ott on Twitter, and like, share, follow, or repost the post to get entered in the prize to win.
It's pretty cool. Pretty easy. Pretty cool. Way to go. Abby sent me the thing. 3 ways. 1, 2, 3. She has spelled it all out
for us.
Yeah, even us golf pros can't mess that one out. So we love those guys. They're great. And the Superdome is an awesome place to practice. You can hit the ball about 80 yards. So a good spot to be, especially after the big storm we just got in Ottawa. Although I missed it. I was in the swimming pool. No, I actually wasn't in the swimming pool. I was at the golf show. Okay, Jake, your thoughts on the golf show. Just quickly, and then I want to get a little bit of Live stuff, a little bit of Brooke Henderson stuff, but what? I mean, you and I, we just bought Force Plates.
We did.
That's a big purchase for our school. I think, well, I know we're the only Force Plates in the city now, and the closest ones, I think, until then were in Montreal, so it's going to be a really cool deal. But so much talk about using vertical forces and ground forces in golf that we just thought we had to, you know, we had to invest in the technology. And
yeah, we've worked with pressure mapping, which is essentially a way to, you know, establish how your weight is moving with the ground and everything for a while.
Yep.
I think, you know, the next step of that is understanding, you know, ground force dynamics, not only for distance, understanding how to create both, you know, vertical and lateral force to help you hit the ball farther, but also to start understanding how forces are applied to a golf swing anyway. I mean, if you do think about it, every impact is an application of force. So, you know, it's something we've done a lot of research on, amalgamated a lot of the things that we've, you know, golf pros have learned from this research into our teaching, but now we're going to be able to do more of it ourselves. So we won't have the technology until, you know, a little later this spring. There's some new exciting versions of the Force Plates coming out that obviously were hot, so shipping them to us is going to take a bit, but we're excited to get rolling.
I find that the graphics, too. I mean, I like the graphics that they're advancing through, right? They keep doing updates and things. And it used to be little squiggly lines, and it was difficult for our client to understand. We had a body track mat years and years ago, and it was difficult for them to understand the traces and whatnot. The graphics are getting much better. We've got 3D motion capture with gears, and they create an avatar. And this is getting very similar, where a person can look on the screen and feel what their body weight and their pressure is doing in their center of mass, the center of their body weight is doing, and move around and really get a feel for it, right? It's very intuitive. It's cool.
I think, you know, when you ask what I thought of the show in general, it's an exciting time from our perspective as teaching pros, because a couple of things are occurring. First of all, technology has both, you know, come to help us do research, but been around long enough now that it's iterating in a way that it's becoming more user-friendly. As you say, the UI interfaces, the user interface is getting better, and the products, frankly, are getting more compact and more usable. One thing about something like a Force Plate, when they first come out, they're essentially a research product. So depending on where you're operating, they're a little untenable. Now it's becoming something that we can employ in our teaching. And, you know, the full swing launch monitor you were talking about in the first segment, as an entry point launch monitor for teachers, that's still incredibly accurate. Yeah, this Mevo kind of stuff is very cool.
Mevo, right? Plus is great too, but this one's even more, has more data points, I think, than Mevo Plus. I believe, I haven't done a ton of research, but Tiger got involved with it, and they're making basically what's a fully loaded launch monitor at an affordable price.
Yeah, there's slightly different things, right? The full swing launch monitor is going after, frankly, as you said, the flight scopes, the foresights, the TrackMans, as a more, you know, professional level market. It's an entry point to that market. The Mevo Plus is a more of a personal launch monitor.
Yeah, I also love the fact there's a lot of young teachers out there who don't make enough money, and they have to go out and, you know, mortgage their lives up to now to buy one of these really expensive launch monitor units.
Which is
right?
Where we come back to, it's an exciting time to be a teacher because all this technology is becoming more and more accessible.
Yeah.
Even in the, you know, even in the simulator, you know, that's the other massive trend we're seeing, right, is simulator golf. Is becoming more and more normal for all of us. I don't think that's a mystery to anybody. A lot of people are putting it in homes, but a lot of people are facilitating that or are putting that in their golf courses, their facilities. Well, you know, it's becoming ubiquitous. One of the cool things we can do is things, you know, like Jim was talking about it, playing other sports on the simulator as well, but it's becoming more accessible, more accurate, and frankly, more fun.
Yeah, so full entertainment.
It's only going to keep going in that direction.
Another thing, I was talking to Tristan Mullally, who was the national women's team coach when Brooke was on Team Canada and whatnot, and he's got another role now, which I don't have to get into, but he was saying there have literally been qualifiers for professional events on a simulator. So they take two of their, you know, I guess they've got some sponsor spots and they've got some other things, but players are playing it so much that somewhere in the world, I forget what Tristan told me, I don't want to say something inaccurate, but there were a couple of exemptions given based on a tournament on simulators. So that's coming, right, Jake, as we do so many more things in the world through virtual reality and gaming, and I know arenas are filled in parts of the world where people watch other people play games, and I mean, we're certainly moving in that direction. As Jim said, though, earlier, you know, we have to look at Jimmy and I are in our 50s, you know, and we're looking at old school teaching and all the new data and science. And we've got to embrace that and learn it all ourselves. But we also have to make it so customers can digest it and absorb it and understand it and enjoy the process. My favorite thing about gears has always been you put the suit on with all the iridescent markers and you do the 3D motion capture, and it's a cool experience. The graphics are amazing. The interface is wonderful. And I really like the ground force stuff we're doing now because the same type of elements are there where the students' eyes will light up and they'll really understand what's going on, right? And those are those little magic moments where people get to be better and better golfers, right?
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
I'm excited about it.
I think the thing that, you know, we've got to remember as teaching professionals is that the technology is a tool. It's not the teacher itself, right? Even different people looking at data, if you don't understand how to look at that data, you can interpret and come to different conclusions based on what you're seeing. Understanding both how to read the data you're getting to make sure you make the proper conclusion, but also then how to apply that data, how to communicate it, it's all really important. And I think that's where, you know, we come back to some of the legends of the game, like you said, you know, Lynn basically saying, look, it's and. You got to come back to how do you teach with the understanding of the technology.
Okay, last thing I saw. So simulators are great, but the putting and chipping has always been pretty lame. But now the putting's moving into the simulation world and the coaching world.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of putting greens out there, some of which you can take your iPad and adjust the brakes and everything. They're giant tables, for lack of a better term. But there's some giant ones, and a lot of them have projectors in the ceiling, mm-hmm. which project down start points and end points and what the curvature should be to really teach people how hard they should hit the golf ball to make the putt curve appropriately and whatever. My favorite one, I want people to look this one up, was a company called Tour Putt out of Korea. And the Korean coach who developed this whole system has actually got, I think, was it a 42-putt challenge where he had different putts from all over the green to test people uphill, downhill, side hill, right to left to right, mid-length, long putts, short putts. And once you go through this initial screening, you could start assessing where your weaknesses are. And he's designed the model. So it's not just like go north, south, east, west, 3 feet away from the hole. He's moving you all over the place to really test your skills and your adaptability. And it was very cool. And there's a lot of companies starting to do that sort of thing. So putting indoors is becoming really high tech as well.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, those are the three main trends of the show, right? We see simulators becoming more and more accessible, more and more dynamic and more accurate.
Yep.
We see teaching technology becoming more user-friendly, more compact, more usable to gather the data. And we see these projection ideas across multiple different parts of golf becoming more of a factor. I agree. The Tour Putt was extraordinary. You know, I think that's a really good example of something that's early to market.
I hope the price comes down. It's a lot of money. It was $40-some thousand U.S.
Without the actual putting green part of it, right?
There was a lot there. But there are other systems. Sam Putt Labs, which is one of the elite putting trainers.
Yep.
And it's not a putting trainer. What did you say, Sam Putt Labs?
Launch monitor for putting is an easy way to describe it.
Yeah. And they've got a full studio now with the same thing, projection from above, testing, obviously, checking out everything. So it's a fun time to be a golfer. There's lots of really scientific things you can do and lots of really fun things you can do. What did you think of the equipment? I mean, Titleist has their new T-Series irons in black now. I like the look of that. That TSR driver's testing really well. We've been fitting with it since the fall. I mean, a lot of the stuff is not new. I saw the guys from My Golf Spy.
It's not new to us, right? It's not new
correct,
to us.
Correct.
Because we've
That's
seen it already.
To say.
Yeah.
That's what I meant to say. We've been fitting with some of it since fall. But it used to be they released all the new stuff at the PGA of America show. Now we already have the stuff and see it. So it's a little bit different show for us. The other one, I saw the guys from My Golf Spy. And they were saying that they were saying the 430 is testing really well. So the My Golf Spy guys were on the floor of the show. I saw a little video they did on YouTube where the 425 ping driver, which was out for three seasons because of COVID, was their number one most forgiving best driver. And they're saying the 430 is testing better now. They also really like, what was the driver from Cobra they really, Aerojet, is it?
Yeah, I think it sounds like an early testing from them. And we're going to start as soon as we get back because that search just came in for us.
We'll do our testing.
The early testing of the Aerojet stuff is it's an improvement on the LTD product from last year, which was a major step forward for Cobra.
I don't think Cobra's given enough love. They're kind of the Rodney Dangerfield there. But when we do our testing with it, the drivers test well. We had a good year with Cobra.
Yeah, they're fast and they're low spinning. So for a lot of people, they really fit a need. Like every company, they're trying to iterate slightly better. So we'll see. But we're hearing good things to start.
What'd you see? Anything else? The Srixon stuff looks great.
Yeah, the Srixon stuff was the equipment I was the most excited to see because we haven't seen much of that. The new irons look very slick. They're doing a little more of some of the technology that the companies are bringing in while keeping that traditional kind of look and feel you expect from a lot of the kind of Japanese OEMs. I'm excited for it. You know, I think the biggest thing is the woods and drivers look a lot cleaner. I'm looking forward to see how they make advancements there because we all know their irons are good. They're kind of some of the more underrated irons in golf, but they're excellent. And I think it's time for the woods to take a step forward, too.
All right, let's take a quick break here. When we come back, I'm going to talk to you and Jim. We'll just share the headset there. We got to bounce it around on Saturday morning. We only got two headsets down here in Orlando. But I want to talk about Nick Faldo's comments about the LIV guys a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Dubai, what's going on out of Torrey Pines as well. And we got to mention the money race pool. You go to kevinhame.com and enter. Jake, you haven't given us anyone. Jimmy and I did a pretty good job last week with a lot of ideas for people. I haven't heard anything from you yet because you weren't on the show last week. But our Kevin Hame season-long money raise pool is running for its about 30th year or whatever. You all know how it works. You go on there. We're starting it at the Phoenix Open, the Waste Management, in a couple of weeks. So we'll talk to you a little bit about that as well. But go to kevinhame.com, put your team in, and that's it. Quick break here, everyone. Jake's with me. Jim Kroll's with me. I'm Kevin Hame.
Now, back to Tee It Up on TSN 1200.
Welcome back, golfers. Final segment this week. Jake, God, an hour's not long enough, is it? We got so much to talk about, but think of the little teaching thing you want to give through the fitting day or something else. We want to get a little more teaching in. I did want to, Brooke won 2 weeks ago. Brooke, of course, made the big change from Ping to TaylorMade. It was interesting. A lot of people are talking about the equipment and, oh boy, her new TaylorMades, is she ever hitting them well? And I was on the air actually yesterday afternoon with Dean Brown and Graham Creech for the Drive Show. And they were talking a little bit about that. You know, they were talking about how much money she's getting versus why'd she make the move and all this different stuff. So I looked up some stats, which are quite interesting. You know, first of all, I want golfers to understand, when a professional golfer changes from one company to another, there is a risk to it. I don't think, you know, I think your game improvement level or how you play with any clubs is more like a stock market kind of mountainy up and down thing more than just straight up. So even though Brooke won week number one, I don't think we think, oh boy, she's hitting those way better than she's ever hit her ping. She may struggle with them for a while, then get better with them for a while. Who knows what's going to happen?
Well, let's also establish, I mean, the model and spec she's using of all the TaylorMade clubs is incredibly close to what she was
same using. Same shafts, same lie angles, same just about everything.
To what she's using in ping, which is really the important part to getting fit for a player like her. And the
that
golf
was my next
ball,
point.
The golf ball change that she did last year is actually the harder change to make. Changing golf balls, understanding how those spin and fly, is by far the harder thing to change than the actual clubs for a good player if they're fit reasonably. Which, by the way, everybody, side note, that's why you should play the same ball all the time. If you're finding random balls and playing them, you're getting some unpredictable stuff for a reason. But, you know, that's the big change. So I think, you know, the fact that she
can they're all big changes. I mean, when you switch to a totally different iron with a different bounce, I mean, they are big changes. They're not like, oh, I'll just move over to this company and get the same shaft and I'll hit them perfectly. So, you know, I hope Brooke plays awesome with this equipment. But, you know, as you said, with all the same specs, the same shaft models in her driver and her irons, the same lie angle, same lengths and everything, they're going to feel pretty similar. It's intriguing to talk about this stuff always. You make a good point, though, Jake, but I looked at some stats here, which are quite interesting, right? In 2021, Brooke won $1,040,000 on the course. Her driver distance with that 48-inch driver she choked down on before the USGA lowered that to 46 as a max, she hit it 274 yards on average. She was ninth on tour at 274. It was her Ping G400 driver, which she used for quite a few years. But the putting in 2021, okay, her putting average was 30.6, 113th on the LPGA Tour. I threw out on the air yesterday, I think that would be about 200th on the men's tour. I mean, I think there's 150 guys in the men's tour, 100 at least, who break 30 putts. Like, you know, that's not a good putting number. And she made $1,040,000, and she hit the ball 275 off the tee. So remember that, everyone. In 2022, last year, a better year, she won a major. She had $2.4 million in on-course earnings, more than double. Her driving distance dropped from 274 to 267, I think because they trim the club. Not that she hits a shorter club shorter, but she just, you know, have to adjust. She always choked up 3 inches, and now she's trying to figure out where to choke up and everything. So she hit it a little bit shorter, dropped from 274 to 267. But in putting, she ended up with 29.95 putts, 71st. So by dropping from 113th to 71st, from 30.6 to 29.95, she doubled her earnings on course. Now we look at Lake Nona with the new TaylorMade clubs and whatever's happening. She won the tournament, $225,000. She averaged, and it's only based on 4 rounds, and it might have been a narrow course. She might not hit driver off every hole, but she averaged 259. So she's down another 6 yards. But the big deal was she was fourth in putting with 28.5 putts per round. So if she went from 30 and a half to 28 and a half, two shots a round times four rounds is eight shots. She'd have won two more tournaments probably in 2021 if she putted with 28 and a half rounds. And I kind of put that to her back injury in the fall. She practiced a lot, you know, probably worked on her putting this winter. It's probably all she could work on. I do think that spider putter she's using is a great putter. She was seeing the hole big, but I just want to kind of put out there, because people are saying, oh, that TaylorMade equipment. I mean, basically, same specs as her last company, and she's actually hitting the ball shorter this week with that driver. It was really all about the putting last week. And she did. I watched her play. She putted. And the other thing I'll say is she and Brittany look so comfortable out on the golf course, very mature. She's a seasoned veteran now. I wouldn't be surprised to see her win three or four times this year.
Yeah, I don't disagree, but
I'm not even making a point. I'm just looking at the stats.
It's way too small a sample size to take any even suggestion of a trend for this year so far. You know, I think the thing that it does do, though, is it highlights exactly the type of player Brooke is, right? She's a top five ball striker almost every week. You know, KPMG stepped up to try to develop the infrastructure. Unfortunately, strokes gain doesn't really exist on the LPGA Tour yet, so it's hard to quantify that perfectly. But, you know, Brooke is one of the best ball strikers on tour. She's generational in that aspect. She's, you know, when she has weeks where her putting doesn't let her down or her putting is above average, which is going to happen as a player of her caliber, she's going to come top five or win the tournament. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, right? You start looking at comparables with the men's tour. I've used Colin Morikawa before. Tony Finau would be another great example for a lot of people to look at. You know, just long, solid ball strikers who the weeks they putt are the weeks they're going to be in contention.
Yeah, look at what Finau's done, right? Finau's kind of an interesting study there, too. Just a natural, just rips the golf ball with this natural motion.
Yeah, and you know who's another great example is a guy like Hideki. Right, Hideki is not statistically a very good putter. I actually think Brooke's a better putter than Hideki is. But yeah, when he putts well, he's such a good ball striker, he's going to be in the mix. And I think what that tournament, what those stats you're talking about do is it shows exactly that. On the weeks where Brooke is in the top 10 putters on the course, she's probably going to be close to winning the tournament because she's so good at everything else. The question is that, you know, an example of her high variance on the greens, or is that a trend? And we hope it's a trend, because if it is, she's going to be dominant this year.
Yeah, I'm just breaking down. I saw a couple of things on Twitter saying, oh boy, no problem with those new clubs. She must have hit them great. Hey, they're great clubs. The Pings are great clubs. The Titleists are great clubs. The Callaways are great clubs. They're all great clubs. I think she won last week because she made more putts.
Totally. What it did is it assuaged some of our worries about such a field player making a change, and that's awesome, right? It's so good to see.
I do think there still might be some ups and downs to that, though.
Totally.
Like you say, it's
we
a
don't know.
Small sample.
Totally.
Hey, let's just wrap up the golf show. I mean, my only comment on the golf show, Jake, is...
You mean the PGA show?
Yeah, PGA
Merchandise
Show.
Which is our big trade show in Florida.
Yeah, we just came back from a couple of weeks in Florida. You guys heard us from down there. It's the PGA of America Merchandise Show. It's the business show of the year. A lot of new releases of equipment. Everyone who's anyone in golf is down there. Brooke was there in the Skechers booth, and there was 1,000 people in line. It looked like a rock star was there. We bumped into Matthew Fitzpatrick. Dennis Quaid was there. It's kind of a weird, kind of fun week. Lots of celebrities, lots of stars. I remember Donald Trump, before he got the presidency, was there buying waste baskets for his courses in Ireland and Scotland. I mean, it's a weird place. You see all kinds of stuff. But I left with a really good feeling. I think golf's in a good spot. Actually, the first guy that Andre fit yesterday, I was talking about, he started really getting into the game through COVID. I mean, COVID has been a weird little blessing for golf, where people have had more time to play, even work from home. They can work at night, play golf during the day, or go hit some balls or whatever. And it's been safe outside. It's a distance game where we're, you know, far enough away from each other and everything. So it's been a wonderful time. And I left the PGA of America show just thinking, you know, we're in a good spot right now. There was no talk of recession or no talk of sales dropping or anything like that. It was a pretty good feeling around the show. That's a broad kind of view of the whole thing. Also very techy, right? You and I, Jake, my head was exploding by the end of the six-hour symposium on ground force mechanics and biofeedback in golf. And, you know, we got another machine that does some 3D motion that we brought on. We got vertical force plates that we got for our golf school. The game is getting very scientific, very data-driven, like all sports are, right? Coaching in golf used to be kind of, well, you look at the old swings, the Jimmy Furyks and the Lee Trevinos and everything. As we move forward, you know, there's talk of Guy Lafleur smoking a cigarette between periods now. The guys all have custom smoothies on the plane on the way home, right? We're just advancing through this. The scores are dropping. The guys are hitting the ball farther. There's better athletes. It's very technical now, which is a neat thing.
Remember that straight train of thought? We talked about
that
the
was
last
good.
Segment.
It was very techie and very optimistic. There, I wrapped it up quickly.
No, look, I agree. We're more optimized now, right? I think one thing that's very interesting is as a lot of the technique or a lot of the technical stuff has allowed us to measure technique, what the greatest players in the world do, what the average even good amateurs do. It's actually confirmed a lot of what we already felt we knew about the golf swing. It doesn't necessarily mean that
it has for us.
The hard truths have changed. But what it does is allows us to make sure we know what is going on when we're working with people, not only in terms of what they do, but what they're supposed to be doing. We're no longer guessing
yep.
about what the right thing is. I think that's very cool. I mean, at the top level of golf, it's allowed us to, you know, optimize players in a way where they're going to be more technically solid than ever. You mix that with the confluence of athletes coming in because of Tiger, frankly, and that's been something special. It's going to continue to be something special.
Yeah, it's a little bit taking the guesswork out. When I walked into the fitting yesterday, there was a lady hitting some balls, and I just tried to give her a couple little tips. She was a sweetie and offered to move her practice station because we needed more room. And I said, I'll have a quick look at you. And she was swaying all over the place. And I said, look, get out your phone and videotape. I mean, we're in a time now, you can buy a $10 app and put a circle around your head, have your friend videotape you, put a circle around your head and see if you're moving around too much or things. So we're in a really neat time where, you know, even though only 14% of people ever take a lesson, isn't that a bizarre number? But yeah. I think the game improvement, the really delving into the game and learning about it and getting better at it, I think in the next decade or so, people are going to really embrace a lot of that stuff because it's fun technology too, right? It's neat to put on the suit and put all the iridescent markers all over you and kind of go through the process. It's kind of fun to work at your game.
It's very fun. The other thing that's very neat about this whole process, too, is a lot of technology is getting more and more user-friendly and more compact, and as a result, more and more affordable as well. I mean, for us, it gives us the ability to measure things more and more. You know, we just mentioned we brought AI in to help us with more motion capture work on our tee line. We have 3D force plates that are actually mobile now, so we can do so on our tee line as well.
Yep.
Stuff like that's very cool for us, but it also means we're not very far away from a lot of this technology being accessible to the consumer. And I don't necessarily mean force plates, that would be a little silly, but a lot of, you know, projection technology that is additive to your simulator experience, different ways that you can practice putting at home using projectors as well. I mean, all these different things are becoming possible, and I think it's becoming a cooler time for us and teaching with tech, and it's going to be huge for the consumer soon, too.
Very well said. It was a super show. Great fit day yesterday. Don't forget, everyone, go to kevinhame.com, put your money raise pool in. Thursday at 8 a.m. is our deadline for our annual money raise pool. Thanks for listening. That was a lot of fun. I might have rambled a bit. You kept me on the tracks pretty well there. Jake will be back again next week, as will I. You guys have a great golf week. Do some practicing. Work on your games a little bit, your swings a little bit, so you can get a little better. And we'll talk to you again in 7 days.